This is PWTorch.com editor Wade Keller, along with Torch columnist Bruce Mitchell and Patrick McNeil. This is the post-TNA Bound for Glory VIP audio roundtable. Let's jump right into it, guys. A lot to talk about on the show, but some of it is stuff we've covered before in
really
slightly different ways. But let's just hit it chronologically here and begin with the big X Division Red Tower of Doom match, where you had to crawl out a red hole at the top to escape. In this one, we had Jay Lethal winning this one to earn an X title shot. It lasted 11 minutes. I thought it was kind of a tough match to grade. I think you can justify high or low just depending on what you're looking for and how frustrated you are with the X Division still being relegated to having everybody shoved into one match in the opener to do a bunch of high spots. Pat, we'll start with you. Your thoughts on this one. Where did this fall on your grading scale?
Well, I thought it was a fast-paced opener, which is fine, except, some big stunt match like this, it either needs to be for something important so it can end the show or just not happen at all. It just seemed to set the wrong tone for the evening. I will say, however, that Steel Asylum is a much better name than Terror Dome. So they had that going for them.
Bruce, did this, I assume you kind of didn't like this.
I hate when you do that. I really do. I hate when you do that. I know
okay,
that
we won't do it.
Said,
Bruce,
well,
hold
I know
on,
we
hold
keep seeing
rewind,
the
rewind.
Over.
Bruce, what did you think of this opening match?
Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
I thought it was very ironic that the month before that Sanjay Dutt won by crawling into the red hole, symbolically, and now this month Jay Lethal won by climbing out of the red hole.
Yeah. Wow.
Wow.
And
I'm a little ashamed to be associated with Bruce.
I'm a little ashamed to be associated with me, too, actually, for that one.
I hope a kid plays that over the sound system and never mind.
You know what I liked about this and took place right after the match? You know, they go to Tanay and West for the formal open of the pay-per-view where they're in front of the camera, they're talking. And Mike Tanay talks proudly about, and I quote, TNA's 6 years of existence. That in fact, I think would be a great name for the anniversary pay per view. 7 years of existence.
8 years of existence. 9 years of existence.
Because that sums up the company right there.
Yes, the of existence. What I love, Pat and Bruce, and this plays into the whole concept of this opening match spot fest tradition that TNA has. I loved how Don West said, "Now let's introduce the show and set the table for this great event." It's like the previous match hadn't even happened. I mean, it just I don't know. I mean, here's what I'll say for this. I thought that there was more of a storyline than typical in this match. If you wanted to say to the wrestlers, impress me by actually taking 12 of you or 7 of you, however many there were, and actually have something you could decipher afterwards as far as some sort of a storyline, I thought they had it in the sense that Shelley and Sabin dominated for the most part early by teaming up, double teaming, and Tanay and West played up their experience. And then in the last few minutes, I thought you had some really well-executed sequences of spots where when someone tried to climb the cage, it backfired because someone would knock him down. And then the end with Dutt and Lethal almost pretty much literally hanging upside down from the cage while punching each other was pretty memorable in a cool spot. Now, the problem is that's the type of finish and spots that you reserve for one of the last two matches on a show where it really means something. So as enthusiastic or as much as I can muster positive comments about what the wrestlers did, that was impressive. It's still so frustrating because as soon as it was over, I mean, it was almost literally like it had never happened. They didn't mention it again. Don West is basically introducing it as if it was the beginning of the show after this match. So it's that same problem where they're just, it's inefficient. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, that's the thing. You literally, unless you're thinking about this line you want to say 2 hours later, you don't remember who won the match at the end of it. It has no consequence whatsoever. There's no context to it. There's nothing. It's just anybody could have won. Anybody could have lost. And they got their spots in. I will say that several years after they started doing this and everything on that show, was, you know, everything they do that's innovative, except for one thing that Samoa Joe Leaf, is all stuff you've seen before, you know, for years and years. But I really get to the point where I don't like where any, and they did it in this match, where you get 6 or 7 guys and they line up and they all suplex each other.
Yeah.
It's so choreographed. It's so gymnastic. It's so, and you know, it's fine in gymnastics. That's choreographed, but it's
right.
It's so phony looking. It's just. It's not even that hard to do. I mean, it's not even, except for, you know, one, you know, I guess somebody goes 1, 2, 3, let's go, or something, but it just doesn't resemble anything resembling a contest or a fight or anything.
I would say this had a higher phony quotient than we're used to overall in the whole show. I thought there was a lot of phoniness that kind of leaked through because they were being overly, you know, trying to be overly cute or overly complex in various areas with some of their spots. A lot of good athleticism, too. But. All right, let's go ahead and move to the next match. We had Jim Cornette and Jeremy Borash backstage. Cornette talking about how excited he is about the role he had in putting this big show together. Mick Foley walks into the room, and Cornette says, I got to go meet with executives from Vegas because a week from Thursday we're going to be live in our first high definition show ever from Las Vegas. And so Jim Cornette was left – I'm sorry, Mick Foley was left alone with Jeremy Borash to reminisce and tell some jokes and interact with Angelina Love and Velvet Sky, who barged in.
I stop for a second? Did you notice what Mick Foley was reminiscing about?
Well, I was going to throw to you and let you do that, but
oh, okay, go ahead.
Let me just set the stage a little bit for those who didn't see the show, which might be most people listening. Angelina Love and Velvet Sky walked in, and they said, "Where's Jim Cornette?" And then one of them said, "We have bigger problems than who this man is," pointing at Mick Foley, which I thought was funny because Sky and Love would be the type who wouldn't know who Foley was, or would at least pretend to not know who they were. And then they did the old cliche about complaining about blue M&Ms in their locker room. And then they left, and Borash made a joke about how Foley would rather be in velvet than in polyester or something like that. All right, Bruce, go ahead.
Well, the thing, he was entertaining, but he was reminiscing about him and Vince Russo's greatest hits in WWE.
Oh, yeah.
Which I thought was really funny and more than one way, because they were like big things. I mean, you know, whatever name, the clown, I mean, that was one of the biggest skits ever. And that was the one where he... where Vince is in the Vince is in the operating room, and here comes Mick Foley to cheer him up, and he's actually driving him crazy, and then Steve Austin beats him with the bedpan, and that was one of the peaks ever of
one of the most
that era, and one of the most fun things, and one of the things that Vince Russo is associated with that really did work, that worked really well, and time was right, and the personalities were over, and he had three very talented people doing it and all that, but so I just liked that because it was like, remember when I was funny, and then it was, then it was kissing the ass of the major writer on the show. So yeah. I just kind of got a kick out of that.
And Bruce, just for context, that actually was later because they went back to Foley a couple times, and that was later when Raish Asaeed came in and yelled about Awesome Kong and warned Jim Cornette that Awesome Kong's mad and we can't be responsible for what she does tonight. And was really upset. And then when they left, that's when Foley said it's time for Yerple the Clown, and he called.
Well, he did about two or three of those. And I think they all fit what I was talking about. But
exactly. That, I'm just, for context, he didn't say that about Love and Sky. He said the clown needed to come back to cheer up Awesome Kong and Saeed. And they did go to Foley a few times. Pat, what did you think of the skits today?
Well, this is the one time where I was actually surprised by something that happened on the TNA show, or actually something that didn't happen on the TNA show, because when they dropped the big jar of M&Ms and said they wanted only blue M&Ms, I was pretty sure we'd go back later during the show and find that Foley had eaten all the non-blue M&Ms and had just left the, just left the blue M&Ms in the jar.
Yep.
I mean, that was right there.
And then how did they not go from an M&M reference to Mick Foley talking about Melina? But anyway.
Well... okay.
Right. That's right.
That's
you know, and I do have to say, Foley did have one where he was talking to Cornette about, riding with the Midnight Express and basically. I mean, I laugh because you have to be a fan that long. But Sweet Stan Lane certainly, some guys had the Playboy thing as a gimmick, and he certainly lived his gimmick. And I'm sure that Mick Foley did take a glass and put it to the
That's in his book, number one.
Yep.
That was actually, for longtime fans, that was pretty enjoyable.
Yep. We also had a segment, we'll just kind of hit on all the Foley segments now and not go back to it. The Team 3D came in and they argued over his, Foley complained about his wardrobe being raided. AJ Styles was there too, and they kind of went back and forth. Ray made a reference to how neither he nor Mick are going to be on Project Runway anytime soon. I'm surprised Brother Ray's even heard of Project Runway. I don't know if this character should necessarily have heard of that show, but they just kind of set up a little tension between Styles and Team 3D for some reason. So,
well, I'm glad that AJ Styles came in, because up until that moment, I'd completely forgotten he was booked on the show.
Yeah. It was a lot of big matches, Pat. Yeah,
I know. Yeah. I'm getting old.
Okay. So after the first Mick Foley skit with Jim Cornette and Love and Sky, then it was time for Beautiful People and Cute Kip against Rock Khan, ODB, and Rhino in the aptly named Bimbo Brawl. I'm still searching high and low for an explanation for why this was called the Bimbo Brawl, other than TNA likes to have a name for every single match. And there were two bimbos out of six, I guess, in it, or maybe three if you count ODB, a self-proclaimed bimbo. But anyway, that's my quest. In this one, or this one ended in 5 minutes, Rhino, ODB, and Khan won. Pat, we'll throw to you for your thoughts on this one.
Do I have thoughts on this one? Yeah, I mean, you know, but my well, I'm looking at my notes, and my first note is the announcers are always yelling, which, you know, which might be good in some spots, but in a match like this, you know, doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And of course, you know, the match is built around the idea of men beating up women.
Yep.
Yeah, that Rhino has promised to gore the whore, well, I'm guessing is one of the, is one of the beautiful people. And, yeah, and the match is just, you know, it's just not good. You have Kip James in there, which is bad enough. You have Rock Khan, who is just, you know.
I give the match a star just because Rock Khan didn't miss a move. I mean, they actually are smart enough to at least limit her to twisting an arm and tagging out. Grabbing Kip's crotch and tagging out. I mean, that's the entirety of what she does, and she is a freak.
Yeah, fair enough.
But, I mean, Bruce, were they smart to at least not overextend anybody's role in this one and keep it short?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing to this, and it didn't mean a thing, but, yeah, I'd say so. And, I, you know, whatever it is that keeps Kip James employed is pretty amazing. But
yes.
And he did do the job, so at least apparently he's at that point in his acceptance of his career status and their acceptance of his career status. But no,
I thought they handled the man-on-woman violence well by limiting it, but it's still one of those uncomfortable moments because – you know, you do. It isn't played for light comedy. You know, when Rhino is, you know, being a jerk and shoving the announcer out of the way and then yelling to the camera at the top of his lungs, "I'm gonna gore the whore!" And it's like, what did they do to you? And that's kind of harsh. And shouldn't we save that kind of intensity for main events? And then he, you know, it's just kind of tone deaf. But I mean, it was. I think the ring intros lasted longer than the match, so everybody got their own ring intro. Okay. So then we had Consequences Creed telling Sheik Abdul-Bashir to, in America, you either love it or you leave it, which is always just so stupid. But anyway.
Well, it's true.
Is it, Bruce?
What? Say that again.
Do you have to love America or leave it?
Well, you certainly
well,
have
to. Well, I mean, that's the theory. I don't know. I don't know.
I thought people who fought for civil rights, I'm kind of glad they stuck around. And the people who didn't love that women couldn't vote, I'm kind of glad they stuck around and fought to change America.
No. We're not talking about loving it.
No. If it's a xenophobic wrestling angle, you're required to say to the foreign heel, even though he's not a foreigner.
That's the thing; he's not.
If he's different in any way, you're required by wrestling law to say America love it or leave it. So,
yeah. Pat, give me your
shot. Well, you're also required. There was a moment during that promo where I honestly thought, honest to God, I thought Consequences Creed was gonna blank out and forget the colors of the American flag because he went to the red and
yeah, he had to look. We had the same reaction. He had to look. He had to look at his suit. And the other thing I loved is, man, I remember. Now this is I am old, but I remember when if you took an American flag and you tore it up to make it your jacket, you'd get your ass hung.
I know.
So he's like looking at this American flag that's been cut up to make him, you know, to make his little suit. And I'm just like, which one is supposed to be the guy that is against America that doesn't,
yeah,
you know, doesn't
I
appreciate
do,
the
I
flag?
I do think Creed has the worst gimmick in wrestling right now. But
yeah, it's the Apollo Creed gimmick. That was huge 20, 30 years ago.
80s, 90s, yeah, about 30 years ago.
Back when Vince Russo and I were in high school, yeah.
Yes. All right, so... the match itself was okay. I thought it began okay, but then it got really rudimentary with some mat worker in the middle that I just don't think was necessary or all that interesting.
Or advisable.
There you go. Thank you. Yes. And then the build to the finish was solid. And then the actual pin was really sloppy. I mean, Creed literally, I mean, it's the finish of the match. The ref has slapped the mat two times. And what does Creed do? He kicks out. I mean, and Bashir is holding on to the second rope because, of course, heels can't win clean even in a situation against someone like Creed. I know. I just thought it was really sloppy. And it was one of what I thought were many lame finishes for a variety of different reasons. They kind of found inventive ways for lame finishes as the show progressed here. Bruce, your thoughts on the actual match?
You know, I did appreciate one thing about this match, and it was that it was a one-on-one match in the mid-card. I just, even though Costas and Creed is not that good and there were sloppy parts of this match, the other thing, though, is if you're going to bring in the veteran of the war that we're in who just got shot up and has bravely come in and puts over your red, white, and blue babyface, guess what? The red, white, and blue babyface has to win.
I agree.
I'm sorry. I mean, I'm just, you know, 100%. I'm sorry. I mean, it's like that was just crap to, like, not do that. I mean, it's like you bring the guy in, he's given him his endorsement. I mean, he's a war hero, a real-life war hero, not a fake one.
Yep.
And then the guy goes over. You can reverse it on the next, you know, on the next show. You can do something else. And it was just, you know, to have that cheap finish where the guy cheats and there's nothing to it, and then Creed just loses. It's like, no, if you want to do that, if you want to put the heel over, don't bring in the veteran. If you got the veteran and you want to make that a big feel-good moment, then make it a damn feel-good moment. Not the guy got shot up and he's a war hero.
Okay.
And your boy loses anyway.
Yeah. Pat, your thoughts?
I didn't think this was a very good match, and we'll just leave it at that.
Fair enough. I'm all for that. Rep point for Pat. All right, then another Foley skit, and then then a little video package of the moment's match. Then Taylor Wilde, Awesome Kong, and Roxy in a TNA Knockouts title match. Taylor defending, of course. And Taylor retained after Awesome Kong got knocked to ringside. Taylor opportunistically finished off Roxy with a bridge duplex. Pat, start us off on this one.
Boy, this was a short match, and I thought there was, I was surprised when in there. I thought they had a lot more in them. I noticed that, you know, this seemed to be more of a match between Roxy and Awesome Kong, and Taylor Wilde was having a little trouble keeping up with the other two, which is, you know, not exactly what you're looking for in your champion. I was disappointed.
Bruce?
I thought it was good that Taylor Wilde kept her belt, because I just think she should lose her belt in a one-on-one match that's been built up to better than this has been. That the belt's the focus of the match. There wasn't a whole lot to this match either.
Doesn't it seem like Taylor was teleported from World Class Championship Wrestling in like 1984?
I mean, she's cute and blonde, so yeah, I guess. I mean,
she just wears her makeup that way, carries herself that way. I don't know. The whole match, it was fine. I mean, all this talk about Roxy being a hardcore wrestler, and there was nothing really hardcore about the way she wrestled. That was kind of odd. You know, I'm glad there wasn't, because it wasn't a hardcore rules match, but building.
I hope they take that. I hope they take that away from her, because that could be a real kiss of death.
Oh yeah. Well,
you know, to a career and also having to live up to that could really get her hurt. So.
Well, it's nice that they've decided, you know, to give her, you know, a different personality, because I don't think there was a long term future in being the Voodoo Queen. But
no, that was maybe the worst gimmick that anybody's been saddled with in a long time. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think she's really likable, but I think there,
yeah, I do
there
too.
Is,
but
I want her to look. I wish her luck. I mean, she seems likable. She's got a good personality. Problem is, her offense just doesn't look credible, and I think that's why they put the hardcore gimmick on her, because they want to employ her. But when she just throws forearms and punches, it really looks like wet noodles, and that's a problem. So it's a challenge, and I don't know. I understand why they're doing the hardcore thing because of that, but if she can tighten up her offense, then I think it would be nice for her to dump it. Yeah, I thought they did a good job, working around Awesome Kong, promising to dominate the women. But I think when you promise that she's in a bad mood, she's going to beat these people up, and she gets knocked to the floor and Taylor wins, and then that's the end of it. I think it's kind of weird. I mean, if you're going to have the heel manager play up what a bad mood Kong is in and warn Jim Cornette, I think you're kind of building expectations for something, and it was just kind of less there and ended up being just an excuse, I think, for a Foley interaction. All right, then Beer Money. Team 3D, Matt Morgan and Abyss, LAX, four-way, Monsters Ball, tag team title match. This one goes 22 minutes. Pat, we'll start with you, too, on this one. What are your thoughts on how this played out?
Well, let's see. You had four teams in the match. Trying to go through all this. First of all, you have Steve Mongo McMichael as the guest referee.
How did he do?
Pat,
hold on. How did he do?
Thank you.
All right.
Well, he's not a good official. I mean, you know,
he sounded very slowly.
Yeah, he messed up the spot that he was given. But more importantly, he came out with possibly the worst haircut I've ever seen on anybody working for TNA in the past 6.5 years.
I think that's the type of hair that gets cut only one time, unless I miss my bet.
It looks like it might be glued in place. We've seen some bad hair on TNA, in TNA too.
Yes, we have.
Really bad hair. You could do a column, Pat, hint on the worst haircuts ever in TNA and over the last 6 years that they've, quote, been in existence.
Why do I get stuck with these?
Because I know you could pull it off.
Yeah.
Okay. Or Bruce can do a memo on it. But anyway.
That really stood out about the match. And, you know, and Mongo's given these spots, and the, you know, he sort of muddles through them. The actual match, it was entertaining in that train wreck way. Although, you know, you have Matt Morgan, who is supposed to be a babyface. Matt Morgan might have done the worst job of playing the crowd that I can remember in since Friday Night SmackDown anyway, by a babyface in a major promotion.
And that concludes the free sample of this 65-minute post-TNA pay-per-view audio roundtable. This is an exclusive feature for VIP members, and you are invited to become a VIP member right now by clicking on the VIP sign-up link right under the Torch logo on every page at pwtorch.com and find out about all the benefits that come with a VIP membership. We offer more VIP benefits than anybody else out there. And we'll enhance your enjoyment or share your frustration in professional wrestling's highs and lows and give you a chance to learn about a lot of things you probably had never heard of or read of before with archives of old Pro Wrestling Torch newsletters dating back to over our 20-plus year history, along with tons of interviews, both text and audio, and, of course, analysis like you just heard here following every pay-per-view, along with around 50 or so audio updates every month. Ad-free access to pwtorch.com's main listing, new Pro Wrestling Torch newsletters every week, and much more. So check out a list of all the benefits and become a VIP member today if you so choose. I think we'll give you a lot of bang for your buck in this tough economy for $7.50 or less if you sign up for a longer-term sub. The price of a ticket going to the movies, and we'll entertain you and inform 30 days every month. And like I said, either share your frustrations or enhance your enjoyment of wrestling, depending on which show, which wrestler, which match it is that we're talking about on any particular moment. All right, that's it for me. This is Torch Editor Wade Keller thanking you for your support of the Torch by listening to this and visiting the website and signing off.